from page 971 in the Church Bible. And this is, of course, part of Jesus' sermon that has come to be known as the Sermon on the Mount. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way as you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, "Let me take the speck out of your eye," while all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces.
If you keep your Bibles open at Matthew 7, the subject I'll be given tonight is do not judge one another. This is a fascinating passage, really. It's so often quoted, yet I'm not sure that we totally understand it. I think it's quite often misquoted. It is quite a difficult passage in some ways, firstly to understand and then to put into practice. If I took a straw poll tonight of whether we should judge one another, I think we'd get quite a difference of opinion. So let's put it into context so we can see what it means. As Robin said, it is part of the Sermon on the Mount. And in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus has been teaching in all the areas of a believer's life. If you flip over a page, back to chapter 5. Firstly, Jesus is teaching us how to live and the attitudes we're supposed to have. Poor in spirit, humble, meek, etc. Then he moves to how we view the world in the statements of salt and light. He talks about the law, about morality and holiness. In chapter 6, he talks about our religious activities, giving, praying, fasting. He discusses our perspective on money and possessions. And then he comes to the text that deals with our relations with each other. The scribes and Pharisees had denied the word of God and established their own system. They believed in an external morality. They acted all their religious activities. They prayed and they fasted, but they did it superficially, in a hypocritical way. The Lord said to them that it has to be from the heart. The Pharisees were so proud and self-righteous. They were convinced that they were superior to everybody else. So they became condemning and judgmental. And that's why Jesus says what he says here. What they did was to invent a system of morality that they became the judge then, and they sat on the throne. They determined whether anybody qualified or not. They became oppressively judgmental to other people. They condemned and they criticized. They were unforgiving. They were unkind. They lacked grace. They constantly criticized everyone who didn't come up to their standard. Luke 16, verses 14 and 15 read, "The Pharisees, who loved money, heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. He said to them, 'You are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. What people value highly is detestable in God's sight.'" So that was their system. They lined their own pockets. They put themselves in places of honor. They justified themselves and judged other people. They put all their confidence in their own self-righteousness. And because of this, Jesus had to address their pride. They looked down on everybody else. So Jesus says, "Do not judge." What Jesus is forbidding in our passage is self-righteous, domineering judgment based on human standards and human understanding. We're going to look at three reasons why they were judging like that. Firstly, they had the wrong view of God. Then they had the wrong view of themselves. Then they had the wrong view of each other. Then I want us to see how we are supposed to act to each other in this way. So firstly, Jesus is showing that they had the wrong view of God. Because of the way they were judging, they were acting like God. They were playing God. Verse 1 says, "Do not judge or you will be judged." See, Jesus reminds the scribes and the Pharisees that they are not the final court. To judge someone based on their own standards was to be playing God. Romans 14, verse 4 reads, "Who are you to judge someone else's servant? To their own master, servants stand or fall, and they will stand, for the Lord is able to make them stand." Paul says here, "Who are you to judge someone else's servant?" So when we are being critical or judgmental, we're trying to become like God and judge his servants. James 4, 11 and 12 reads, "Brothers and sisters, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against a brother or sister or judges them speaks against the law and judges it. When you judge the law, you're not keeping it, but sitting in judgment on it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But you, who are you to judge your neighbor?" What is the sin that's involved in this kind of judgment? It's pride, isn't it? Pride tells us that we're better than everybody else. Pride tells us that we can play God, that we don't need God. If we think about it, every time we sit in judgment on someone in the same way that the scribes and Pharisees did, every time we criticize someone's motives or think we have a right to judge them, we're playing God. Every time we get back at somebody, get even, we're playing God. Jesus is not telling us to stop examining and be discerning with each other, as we'll see later. He's saying that their unrighteous judgment has to stop. Secondly, Jesus says, don't judge because you've got the wrong view of each other. You see, people think that they can judge because they're under a different set of rules than everybody else. The Pharisees thought that. They thought they were above everything that Jesus taught, above everyone else. Jesus says in verse 2, "For in the same way as you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." This is talking about God's judgment. What he's saying is, what judgment you use on each other, I will use on you. And how you measure it, it will be measured to you. You see, if you say, "I'm going to judge you," you're saying, "I know enough to be judged myself." Did anyone watch The Secret Life of Five-Year-Olds? You see that program? They had Secret Life of Five-Year-Olds, Secret Life of Six-Year-Olds. In the one episode that I watched, there's about 10 children in a classroom. And they brought a large chocolate cake and they put it in the middle of the room. And they said to the kids, "Don't touch the cake. That's for later." Then they went out of the room and they watched them. After a couple of minutes, one little boy approached the cake, smelling it, looking at it. Then a couple of his mates came and they're all looking at it. They touched it. They smelt it. They even licked it. I know. And after about 5 or 10 minutes, one of the little boys grabbed some and ate it. And they straight away started accusing him. "You can't do that. That's naughty. I'm telling you, that's so wrong." But within another 5 minutes, a lot of them that were saying that were eating it themselves. And that's what this is all about. You can't judge someone unless you're different. Because when you judge someone, you're setting yourself up to be judged. See, the Pharisees had a wrong view of others. They thought they were above everybody else and they could judge them. But they had double standards. So you're going to be judged on the same basis that you judge everyone else. And Romans chapter 2, please turn to it with me, please. Romans chapter 2 spells this out so clearly. "You therefore have no excuse, you who pass judgment on someone else, for at what point you judge another, you are condemning yourself, because you who pass judgment do the same things. Now we know that God's judgment against those who do such things is based on truth. So when you, a mere human being, pass judgment on them and yet do the same things, do you think you will escape God's judgment? Or do you show contempt for the riches of his kindness, forbearance and patience, not realizing that God's kindness is intended to lead you to repentance. See, there aren't any double standards with God. We should not judge in the way they were judging, because judging like that, we're playing God. And doing that, we're saying that we are good enough to be judged ourselves, because we think we're better than others. But God will judge us with the same standard that we judge. See, when you judge somebody or criticize somebody, it's like throwing a boomerang, because the boomerang will come back. And when it comes back, this time it's God judging you. Thirdly, Jesus says, don't judge. Don't judge because you've got a false view of yourself. See, haven't we all got things in our own lives that we need to work on before we can look around and see what everybody else is up to? I think if we spent the same amount of time evaluating ourselves as we do criticizing and judging each other, we'd discover a lot that we need to change and put right. Because until we get our own lives straightened out, we're useless to help anybody else. And that's essentially what the Lord's saying in verses 3 to 5 of our passage. It says in verse 3, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take that speck out of your eye, when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Having something in your eye is miserable, isn't it? Having a little tiny speck of dust in your eye, it irritates, it hurts, you have to rub your eye and you can't see properly. Having sin in your life should be the same as that. It should irritate and annoy till you do something about it. Imagine if you asked someone to come and help you get something out of your eye and they turned up with a great big plank in their eye. You'd send them away, wouldn't you? Clear off. You're going to make it worse. You can't see what you're doing. So don't go to someone and try and remove their speck when there's a plank sticking out of your eye, because you'll just make it worse. Usually the people who see everything wrong in someone's life see absolutely nothing wrong in their own lives. And that's what's called being self-righteous. And that's what this plank is. Jesus says to the Pharisees, the plank in your eye isn't the general sins, it's self-righteousness. And as long as you're self-righteous and proud, you set yourself up to be a judge. You cannot help anybody. See, that great big plank of self-righteousness is the vilest of sins. Jesus always condemns sin, never the sinner, except for self-righteousness, because it plays God. It denies the gospel. Self-righteousness says, I am holy as I am, and I don't need God. And we see that in the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, don't we? Turn with me to Luke 18. Luke 18, verses 9 to 14, the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. Self-righteousness of them is so evident in this passage. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. See, as long as we are self-righteous, as long as we think that we're okay, like that Pharisee, we will never bother dealing with sin in our own life. In effect, we're blind. So in that state, Jesus says, do not judge each other. Because in verse 5, he says, you hypocrite. See, first, we have to be concerned with our own lives. We have to start by examining ourselves, by looking into our hearts. Because it's there we will see our motives. And unless our hearts are right, we're no use to anyone else. And that's an ongoing process. We have to keep on looking and examining. You see, that's the key to the Beatitudes, really. until you humbly, meekly, hungered and thirst for righteousness, out of a sense of your sin, then you can never do these other things right. The truly holy person, the person that is Christ-like, doesn't look at splinters in other people's eyes. He concentrates on what's in his eye and deals with it. So that's why Jesus is saying to them, don't judge. Don't judge like this, because you're not right. You're self-righteous. So lastly, what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to judge or not? How many times have you heard people say, judge not, lest ye be judged, as it says in the old version, the King James version. Or who are you to judge? We've all heard that, haven't we? See, this passage is so often misunderstood. People say, because of this passage, we should never judge. We should never condemn anyone for anything. We should never evaluate anything at all. We don't want to judge because we will be judged. And I think it's easier in some ways to like that view. Because we live in an age, don't we, where we talk about love and compromise, unity, getting along with each other. And they're all good things. But not at the cost of doctrine. Not at the cost of theology. Or when it allows sin. There's a church that you are probably aware of whose minister is a practicing homosexual. Now, I've asked a couple of people on separate occasions that attend that church. Well, one lady attends, another chap has links to the church. I asked them how they reconcile the fact that their minister is a practicing homosexual, how they reconcile that with the Bible. And they both said something very, very similar. They said, oh, I know it's difficult. And at first I did struggle, but he's such a lovely man. And he shows so much love to everyone. You see, don't get me wrong. A pastor having love is so, so important and necessary. But a lot of churches play down doctrine because they want to go all out for love and fellowship. What I mean by doctrine is our beliefs, our convictions. They compromise them in the name of love. You see, we're so concerned of love and unity that we don't judge or discern what is right and what is wrong. We get rid of doctrine in the place of so-called love. But real love is to judge sin. If you go back in church history, you will have seen times when men were praised for being men of conviction, men of principle, men of standards. And without men like that, there wouldn't have been a Reformation. We wouldn't be where we are now. But so often nowadays, the man who is praised is the one who compromises. Did the Apostle Paul compromise in these ways? No. It is this thought, it is people thinking like this that has taken do not judge to believe that we shouldn't have any discernment in the church. Some Christians go as far as to say we shouldn't even have law courts. But Jesus isn't condemning law courts because the Bible instituted them. The principle of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is based on a law court. And Romans 13 shows us how to submit to governing authorities in that way. See, the Bible's not condemning any kind of judgment. The Bible tells us we must discern. We must judge. We must know how to separate truth from falsehood. And the whole of the Sermon on the Mount gives a clear understanding of that, doesn't it? A clear distinction between true religion and false religion. So clearly, there has to be some sort of discernment and judgment. Verse 6 says, do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. Now to do that, to find out who the dogs are, to find out who the pigs are, you have to judge. You have to have discernment, don't you? So in this very passage that we're looking at that says do not judge, it's also saying do test and discriminate. Do evaluate between true and false. Further on in Matthew 18, if you turn a few pages over with me, to Matthew 18, I think we all know this passage. Matthew 18, 15 to 17. It says, if your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault just between the two of you. If they listen to you, you have won them over. But if they will not listen, take one or two others along, so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. And if they refuse to listen even to the church, treat them as you would a pagan or tax collector. See, we're told quite plainly there to confront a brother who has sinned against us, boldly. To do that, you have to make a judgment. We can't ignore passages like this because we feel it'd be more loving to let things go. Leviticus, in the Old Testament, 19, verse 17 says, "Do not hate a fellow Israelite in your heart. Rebuke your neighbor frankly, so that you will not share their guilt." So we could turn that verse to now, couldn't we? And we could say, do not hate each other in this building. Instead of hating each other, let's rebuke each other frankly. Because if you allow someone to sin, you hate them, not love them. Because love makes a change. It's not loving to say when you find somebody in sin, nothing about it, and tolerate it. It's not loving to leave it because you're frightened to judge. Because if you don't confront sin, you hate people. Because love confronts sin. If we love someone, we will want the best for them, won't we? We will want them to be right with God. So we will confront them. You see, it's not about us. It's about them. How we feel really doesn't come into it. It's motive that's important. It's love for someone else. It's that desire that they are restored gently. It doesn't come from a self-righteous ego. And that's what this passage in Matthew 7 is all about. Jesus says to the Pharisees, do not judge in the way that you are judging. Stop. But then he says, we must not stop being discerning. We must not stop judging altogether. The Sermon on the Mount makes it clear that the Lord is not prohibiting judgment. He's promoting discernment. See, the great sermon by Jesus teaches that we must make every effort to judge between false and truth. If we look at this passage with that in mind, it does take on a completely different angle. Christ was condemning a very specific kind of self-righteous judgment that we see in the scribes and Pharisees. The kind that we see on display in the parable of the tax collector and the Pharisee that we read. Further down in Matthew 7, in verse 15, he says, watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. If you don't examine and you don't judge, you will see the sheep's clothes, but you won't see the wolf that's underneath. See, there must be discernment. There must be a judging. We don't know the dogs and the pigs that we'll need to avoid. See, confrontation and criticism are not forbidden in the church, but they must come out of a heart of humility and purity. See, we need to humbly submit to the Lord, shining the light of his word into the dark areas of our own lives first, instead of arrogantly pointing out it in everyone else. It's only when we've dealt with our own sin, the sin of pride and self-righteousness, that we can help anybody else. All confrontation of sin in others must be done out of meekness, not pride. We can't play the role of a judge, passing sentence as if we were God. We can't play the role of a superior as if we're exempt from the same standards that we're judging by. You must not play the hypocrite. See, we do a lot of harm when we criticize and judge each other out of arrogance. But we also damage each other and the church if we fail to judge with godly judgment and discernment when it's needed. When he says, do not judge in chapter 7, he's not talking about the righteous judgment. He's talking about the ugly, self-righteous judgment that the Pharisees had. Can we see the dangers that we might come across? There are three, aren't there? Firstly, we can pretend that we're judging out of right motives, because pride can easily make us feel that. We can become self-righteous and start judging everybody, just as the Pharisees did. That's why we've got to take the first part of the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus says, be humble and meek and examine yourselves before God. But there are also a couple of other dangers. The danger of saying, I'm not going to judge at all. I'll hear the message, but I'm just going to sit in church quietly and confess my own sin. I'm just going to take care of me. We become unwilling to confront sin in someone's life when we should confront it. Judge not, lest ye be judged. I'm going to keep quiet. The other danger is that we will not discern or discriminate at all. Just believe everything that we're told. We'll never challenge things that are wrong. See, there are real dangers, dangers that come from misunderstanding this passage, and they can be quite devastating. Because if we think we should not judge at all, we won't confront sin. Then a little yeast works through the whole batch of dough, as it says in Galatians 5:9, and the church becomes corrupted. And if we don't discriminate the true from the false, we will listen to heresy. So the dangers are, we will judge like the Pharisees, or we'll go the other way and fail to deal with sin, or fail to deal with a false teacher. See, there's a balance, and it's only attainable if our hearts are right with God. And that's what makes this so hard to put into practice. See, Jesus covers all of these dangers in this passage. We've talked about the first one, how not to judge in a self-righteous way. But Jesus says we must judge out of righteousness. Judge each other and rebuke a sinning brother. Verse 5 says, you hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. That clearly shows us that we do have a job to do of removing each other's specks. He doesn't stop with the fact that you've got a plank in your eye. He says, get the plank out of your eye. Get rid of it. Get rid of the self-righteousness in your life and your pride. Then you will see clearly to help your brother. So how do we do that? We need to examine ourselves often. Confess the sin we see. First, we have to look and see that it's there. Verse 3 says, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? See, if we pay no attention, we won't see anything. Jesus is saying here, have a good look in your life. Can't you see that you've got a spiritual problem yourself? A problem that makes you self-righteous and critical. When you've looked and found your problem, then go to verse 5 and take the plank out and deal with it. You can't say, I'm not going to judge just in case I've got a plank sticking in my eye. Because Jesus says, look for it. And if it's there, deal with it. And then once we've done that, then we can move to the second part of verse 5. Where it says, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. When you've got a humble heart, when you are meek, then you can help judge. If we love each other, we have to help each other with specks in our eyes, because we all have them. But we've got to do it in the right way. We can't let each other go on in sin and do nothing about it. But we have to deal with our own sin first. David put it in Psalm 51. He said, create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Do not cast me from your presence, or take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore me to the joy of your salvation, and grant me a willing spirit to sustain me. Then I will teach transgressors your ways, so that sinners will turn back to you. Create in me a clean heart. Then I will teach transgressors your ways, so that sinners will turn back to you. Jesus is not saying, don't help a sinning brother by bringing their sin to light. He's saying, get your own act together first. Because then you're going to give the right help. It's going to be the humble help, the meek help, the gentle help. Galatians 6:1 says, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. Notice the word should. We should deal with sin. And then it says, restore that person gently. And you can only do that if you have a humble, meek heart. If you are self-righteous, then you won't be doing that because your motives are wrong. This passage simply means Do not be a self-righteous judge, playing God. We're not to be superior over each other, thinking that we're above everybody else. We're not to be hypocrites, blaming everyone else and not seeing the sin in our own lives. But we are to judge in a loving, humble, gentle way that only comes from having dealt with your own sin. The second danger, the third danger that we spoke of, we saw we have a fear to discern, because we don't want to discriminate, do we? So we compromise. We compromise what we believe so we don't upset anybody. We just want to love everyone. Look again at verse 6 with me. Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. We have to discern and discriminate in order to know the dogs and pigs. Now, this is really a fascinating verse, and I was tempted to leave it because it is really quite difficult, this verse, to explain in this short time we have. But it does need explaining. See, there's so much in the Sermon on the Mount that is beautiful and appealing. But then we come to this verse, and it's really quite shocking and judgmental. All through our passage, Jesus hasn't told us to stop judging, just judge in the right way. Up to now, verses 1 to 5, we've learned not to be judgmental with an attitude of self-righteousness. But then in verse 6, he warns us about stopping judging. See, the holy things and the pearls in verse 6 refer to the sacred truths of the gospel that have been entrusted to us. These things are precious. Pearls are precious. Holy, sacred things are precious. We have become stewards of these holy, precious things. God's given them to us. We are clay jars with this treasure inside. We shouldn't treat it lightly, because it is sacred and holy. It's so important that we treat the gospel carefully. Dogs in those days weren't the nice fluffy pets that we have. Dogs were horrible dogs. They scavenged. They roamed the streets. They were wild dogs, dirty dogs. And we know what the Jewish people thought of pigs, filthy, unclean animals. But the dog in our passage is referring to someone who is hardened towards God, hostile if anyone should share the gospel with them. They represent those who viciously oppose the gospel. And so Jesus says, don't give it them. Which is an amazing statement. The pig is someone that can't discern between holy and evil. See, you could prepare a lovely meal for a pig, or you could just tip it on the floor. It wouldn't really matter to a pig, would it? It doesn't value anything. What Jesus is saying when he says, do not give holy things to dogs or pearls to pigs, is be discerning and discriminate. Judge in a righteous way. Don't give the gospel in a thoughtless manner. Don't allow someone who hates it to trample it under their feet. But hang on, what about their soul? Maybe I could win them for the Lord. You have to let God take care of that. Don't let them trample the pearl in the mud. Don't throw this holy thing to pigs. This is a hard word from the Lord, and it's difficult for us to distinguish in our own minds. So we do need to be dependent on the Lord for wisdom in this. See, when the disciples were sent out in Matthew chapter 10, he said, if you come to a place and they don't hear your message, leave and shake the dust off your feet. Don't go back there. And there was a difference in the way that Jesus spoke to Pilate and the way he spoke to King Herod. When he stood before Pilate, Pilate asked him questions and Jesus answered them. Pilate even said, I find no fault with this man. Pilate, despite his failings, saw Jesus as an innocent man and sought to free him. See, he was coming from a completely different place to that of Herod. Herod wasn't interested in finding the truth. So when he questioned the Lord, the Bible tells us Jesus didn't answer him at all. Herod showed his true character by dressing Jesus in a mock robe. He treated him with contempt and he sent him back to Pilate. So Jesus didn't give what was sacred. Jesus didn't give him a precious pearl. Martin Lloyd-Jones summed it up this way. He said, You answered the questions of a Pilate, but you say nothing to a Herod. See, we have to judge. We have to be discerning about this, which really isn't easy. But in order to do that, we have to have pure, humble hearts, because that's where it's coming from. So to summarize, Jesus says, don't judge. Don't judge if you've got that plank sticking out of your eye, the plank of self-righteousness, of pride, unloving, uncaring, unmerciful, that attitude the Pharisees had. Do something about it. Get rid of that sin. Don't be content to leave that plank in your eye. Then when you have dealt with it and your heart is humble and gentle and meek, when you've got a selfless love, then you will see clearly to judge. You'll see how to deal with the speck in your brother's eye. You'll be able to discern the wolf in the sheep's clothing, and you'll be able to handle this precious pearl of the gospel with great care. Quite a difficult passage, quite a hard passage in some ways, but it all depends, like most things, on the state of our heart. If we get our hearts right with God, then we're living as God wants us to. Then this isn't the problem anymore, because we will judge each other in the right way. And when someone judges us for sin in our lives, we will take it the right way. And we will get on together with unity, working together so we're all built up, so we're all growing nearer to Christ.